Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and welcome to the Dom Harvey Podcast, brought to you by Radix and Generate. Coming up, Janet Redmond.
Feel what you're feeling. Just let the emotions be here first, Dom. Go.
I'd want to tell him it's going to be all right, but it's like...
It wasn't all right, was it?
No, and it's still not.
Thank you for feeling this. And nothing about that was all right in order for him to relax.
Janet Redmond, she calls herself a possibility manager. That title is basically her reworking of the word therapist. She was previously a trauma specialist, training psychotherapists and counsellors. I reached out to Janet immediately after watching the Israel Adesanya documentary movie Stylebender. Hey, by the way, if you're in New Zealand and you have a Neon account, you can watch Stylebender for free, all about Israel Adesanya, the UFC star. In my opinion, one of the best sports docos I've ever seen. So real, so raw, so much vulnerability. Incredible stuff. So after watching Stylebender and seeing Janet Redmond, she's in one of the opening scenes as a matter of fact, I thought this grandmother from Nelson in the camper van was the surprise star of the film. This is, I suppose, a podcast of two halves. In the first half, we chat about her relationship with Izzy and a little bit about who she is and what she does to help people. Then in the second half, she gets to work on me, and this is not an easy listen, and I mean, I haven't heard it back since I recorded it with Janet, and I don't think I'll ever go back and listen to it ever again. As a matter of fact, I've been sitting on this episode for a couple of months. I loved it. I loved my time with Janet. She's an incredible human with an amazing gift, but I've been shit scared about sharing it. I guess because first of all, I don't want to piss anyone off in my family or make anyone I care about feel bad, but also because I still feel embarrassed when I cry or show some sort of vulnerability. And I know that allowing yourself to be vulnerable is a strength and it's not a weakness. And it's something that I encourage from my guests. But if I'm being completely honest with you guys, it is still something that I'm struggling with myself. So it's quite an emotional episode. It's a bit of a tough listen in parts. But love to hear your feedback once you've heard it. Thanks very much to my mates at Generate and Radix for sponsoring this episode. These two Kiwi companies are both leaders in their fields. For all the links and for more info about these friends of the podcast, please go to the description in this episode. They're both great companies who can add value to your life. So by supporting them, not only will you be helping me and my podcast massively, you'll also be helping yourself. So thanks again, Generate and Radix. Okay, here we go. Let's get into it. Janet Redmond on the Dom Harvey Podcast.
How does it go for you as you start? Like, are you scared or glad, or what do you feel when you start interview?
Right now, at the beginning.
Right now, yeah.
Sort of like a little bit of performance anxiety, I guess. Like you want to do, even though it's not a performance, but I want to do a good job and make sure I get the best out of the guest, so the guest looks good. And does that make sense?
Total sense.
Yeah. Janet Redmond, welcome to my podcast.
Thank you, Dom. Do you like Dom or Dominic?
Dom's good.
Dom.
Dom's good. Yeah, it's funny. You're the first person that's asked that. Oh. I sort of respond to both, but I like them both. I'm okay with both.
Well, it interests me why some people shorten the name they were given, so that's why I ask that. But that might take us down a totally different path.
What was it? When I was growing up, it was a very rare name. I think it is still quite rare, but not as rare as what it was. And I was very self-conscious, like growing up. It's like we're getting into a therapy session already. Like school teachers at the start of the year, or when you're waiting in a doctor's clinic or whatever, they'd come out and they'd call Dominique, which is the girl's version of the name.
Yeah.
And for some reason that, really made me feel uncomfortable when I was little.
I bet. But anyway. It's a subtle difference, Dominic, Dominique.
Yeah, well, Dominique wasn't my name. Anyway.
I want to jump in there. I'm allergic to the word therapist. Okay. I used to be a therapist, psychotherapist registered, and the reason I stepped away from that probably will come out in this conversation. I call myself a possibility manager now.
Yeah, and that was the first thing I was going to ask you. What does that mean?
So a possibility manager for me is about supporting people to change the way they think, so to change their thoughtware. Because if we don't change the thoughtware, we can't change the context of what it is we want that's different. And so possibility management is quite a huge worldwide, culture now, with an amazing guy I met in San Francisco 2007, Clinton Callahan.
Yeah, and you're very qualified. Like you've been, you're a trained primary school teacher, you're a trained psychotherapist, you've done a lot of specialist work with trauma.
Yes.
And this is you now, possibility manager, traveling around the country in a camper van you call your flying walker.
Walker or feelings walker. It's the place people can come and look at why they stopped feeling and feel. Because for me, feelings have a huge information and energy that can be used for either reinforcing old traumas or for creating the kind of communication and world I want to live in. And that's what motivates me to hold spaces that I hold.
Yeah. Now you are here today, or you came on my radar because just last weekend on Neon, which is a streaming platform, I watched Stylebender, the Israel Adesanya documentary, which was released in late 2023. And it's just available now on the Neon streaming platform. And my God, it's Israel's movie, but you stole the show for me, as did his coach Eugene. But Stylebender, the documentary, it starts with you, this beautiful shot of your flying walker up on a hillside, and then it goes inside, and then you feature throughout the documentary not therapy sessions. I was going to call it therapy. What do you call it?
Well, feel to heal spaces. Okay. Feel to heal.
Yeah, and this movie for me was an unexpected surprise. I'd say it's one of the best sports documentaries I've ever seen. I was surprisingly emotional in it, cried several times, as in tears streaming down my cheeks, crying.
At which point, Dom?
Oh, well, I mean, one that springs to mind is, and I wanted to get into this later in what you were doing, one where you're doing a therapy session with Israel and he's being held down by three guys trying to get some trauma out of his gut, and then he's just in a ball of tears on the ground. And it was, it was a hard watch.
Yeah, that's called a rage hold. So it's the way of being able to express old emotions in a really safe way. When I'd been to Izzy's place before, we did a group with about seven of his mates. And the first time he did the rage hold, I had to sit on one of the four guys who were holding him down. There was so much old energy in there.
So he's quite strong.
Yeah, very strong, yeah.
Okay, so how did this come about? How did you end? How did you, like a pensioner? Yeah, a woman who's...
Not retired. Okay. I had my 65th birthday January, and I'm not retiring, I'm refiring.
Yeah,
so yes,
I love that.
I'm refiring as the woman I am now. How did I get involved with it?
How did a 65-year-old woman from Mochueka end up as the unlikely star of the Israel Adesanya story?
I ask myself the same question, Dom. It's like, because really, you pick the most unlikely person on the planet for that role, and it's like, pick me, not into sports. How it came about was
Zoe McIntosh, the director.
The director came to one of my trainings. I had a three-day training, Feel to Heal training at the retreat centre, Sharda Retreat Centre in Tuakau. And she came, and she knew I was working with Izzy, and she said, what you do is magic, and it needs to be documented. So she asked if I'd bring the two together, because she knew, I'll keep the names anonymous, she knew Izzy's partner at the time, and that's how it all came together. Right. And she said to me, it might be worth you interviewing her, she said to me, but for my involvement, she'd have pulled out because it was a bog-standard, boring, linear sportsman documentary. And she said once she had that creative impulse to include me and the sessions we did, she was totally refired up to keep going and do the beautiful job she's done.
And were you on board from the beginning, or were you reluctant to take part? I mean, sessions like this are very, very private and personal, and yeah, they're not often shared. I suppose that's more to do with the client than the counsellor, but how did you feel about that?
I was, well, with clear contracting that Israel's okay,
yeah,
I was totally on board, because look at the many millions of people, especially young men, that he can reach, given his street credibility. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so powerful. So what about that first meeting or that first interaction? Because you had no idea who he was, right?
None. I just told you right there. No. So his girlfriend at the time reached out to me, and they asked, I was seeing her first, and saw them both together. It was lockdown, so it was all on Zoom.
What was it, like a couples therapy thing or something?
Well, I like to call it, because the trainings I offer is called Building Communication Bridges, inside and out, so between different parts of ourselves and together. So as mediator or coach would be other words people use for me. And, yeah, was helping them see where they were creating drama together and offered them other tools other than creating drama.
And then, so when you start working with Israel Adesanya one-on-one, how does that happen with the first session? Like where do you begin? you know what I mean?
Well, probably,
I had my I saw a therapist for the first time in my life, I think it was just pre-lockdown, sort of 2020, and it was one of the best things I've ever done. But I put it off for the first 45 years or whatever of my life, because I thought, I'm going to sit down and I'm not going to know where to start.
Oh, that isn't easy to talk to. He opened up very openly. But some other people who've much more quieter in their personality, I start where they are. I think that is one of my skills, being able to meet people where they're at with no judgment and ask them why are they reaching out to someone like me. And then we start there.
And how long was it before he broke down and cried? Was that the first session, or does that take a while? Are you sort of chipping away for a bit?
I don't know. And because that's not the part I have a yes to reveal, I'd rather I want to focus on the parts in the movie which he is okay about, people knowing about. So.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Yeah, cool. That's a good answer. I really respect that. So how many – and. Was the sessions that you did mainly for the movie, or is there a lot of stuff that you did that's not filmed and will never be seen? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there is some sessions, not too many. It's definitely some sessions that aren't seen. And if I was the director of the movie, I would have put other things in as well.
Really?
Yeah. One of my team who's one of the space holder trainees for the trainings I offer, Briar. She wants to get all the documentary stuff that wasn't screened from, what's the company called, Fluoro Black, and use that to make another documentary.
Yeah, and how did you feel personally, holding these sessions, which you do, and have done for many years, but doing it with camera crews there and people holding microphones and...
Totally, a bit like this here now, totally my attention's with you. Fraser said at the end that I should be an actor, and I did this, Frank. Be an actor? Why would I need to be an actor when this is the real thing?
Yeah.
So, no, it didn't affect me at all. I mean, my camper's only small, And there's a huge big camera over there, but totally it was, I think you can see that in the movie.
Mm.
My focus is, and presence was totally with him.
Yeah, and so you have a few sessions, and then are you still in contact now? Or is it sort of like...
I invited him to my 65th birthday, but he's not in the country. But in terms of sessions, no, not at the moment.
Yeah. Well, is he sort of fixed now, or he just
he's not longer fixed.
No, is anyone ever fixed, or is it eight sessions or six sessions, and then?
Well, I tell you what, if get into a primary relationship and test it, that's what I say. Test the work,
right.
Because although I was seen as a trauma specialist, I changed the word to UNCLES. It's an acronym: unprocessed, neglected key life events, and so I. Say we have uncles that need processing, because what was unprocessed needs processing, and what was neglected needs our attention. Those key life events that are really clearly in Stylebender movie that totally defined who he was.
Mm. Yeah, some of these things you're talking about is moving to New Zealand, like just severe bullying at school, including being like held over a urinal. And just awful racism. Yeah, which almost, it's kind of similar to the Mike Tyson story in a way. Mike Tyson used to, he was a very introverted kid, and he used to like raise and race pigeons. And there was a bully that that grabbed his pigeon off him one day and like ripped the head off. And Mike decided he needed to defend himself after that. So he got into boxing. So it feels like a similar sort of thing.
Very similar, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why at the end of the movie, we're out at Karikari, just past Pihar, and I had a go. That's one thing I would keep putting in the movie. I had a go three or four different ways of saying, how can you fight differently without pummeling and really hurting someone else? Because now his chip off his shoulder was healed. I would make that declaration. And he said, well, it would just be like sparring, and there's not much fun in that. Well, there's not much money in it either, probably.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know. I've never done any fighting in my life, and I know very little about it. But I suppose for someone like Israel Adesanya, the fear would be, you smooth away his edges, and then he just doesn't have that killer instinct anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
he's too gentle to.
Exactly. I said this to him, Dom. I said, informed consent here. If you heal all this, you might not be able to fight.
You may not be a savage anymore.
Yeah. Hopefully. And he has so many other skills, his creativity, his anime stuff. So, no, I really put that on the table to say, if you heal this, you may not be able to keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, well, I'm personally like a big fan of the whole Israel Adesanya package. You know, the fighting thing, I don't know too much about it, but I enjoy watching him. But mainly I enjoy the post-match speeches, how gracious and humble he's been in defeat, how arrogant and cocky he is when he wins, how defiant he is. Just like his mannerisms, everything about him, the whole package. I'm just a massive fan. And to see this documentary, I think that's the thing that sort of upset me, because you just don't realise what someone's going through. You know, from an outside perspective, all you see is this this swaggy dude driving around in a McLaren.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's right. I think we've all got really good survival mechanisms that can totally mask what's happening on the inside. And like I said to you before, I was totally surprised I would recommend the movie, because of I just don't like all that fighting. Mm. But it wasn't. It was a human at his most vulnerable, most arrogant, like you said, most cock-headed, most kind. So yeah. That's why I love it. We've all got our shadow side. We've all got our shining side. And that's why I recommend it.
Yeah.
People to go and see the movie.
I love that. Have you? How has your life changed since the documentary came out? Has it changed at all?
Not much.
No.
My trainings are full. So I come up to Auckland every few months and hold these building communication bridges inside and out trainings. Feel to heal spaces and in Nelson. So... a little, but not much.
But a different sort of clientele or new customers? Like you're seeing many, many young men or...?
A few, for sure. Yeah. But that's what I was doing anyway.
Mm. All right. Hey, well, let's talk about you for a second then. So you're a possibility manager. What is it that makes you so good?
Well, years of, first of all, following my mentor, which was Dr. Richard Erskine, teaching me how to make contact with people and being able to meet them exactly where they're at. I have a sound theoretical base, which is my roadmaps for holding spaces. Usually people, when they're ready, are willing to get into their feelings. And I know I can hold space for 100% anger, 100% sadness, 100% fear, 100% joy. And that's the four feelings I use. Hmm. Anything else for me is a mixed emotion, and then that's what creates depression and other obsessive compulsive disorders and things.
Hmm.
So having a sound theoretical base, plus however many years and decades of experience. Mm. And my passion for people to live their potential, Dom. Yeah, and I can feel my own sadness a bit when I think about the last funeral I took, because I'm also a celebrant. My friends, my son's young friend and Jamie's friend, Tim, died, killed himself at 16.
Oh.
So, heaps. I've got an article on my website about this. These young men especially, not only men, being the canary in the coal mine, that something in the way we're living isn't working. And so I wrote a little article about that.
Yeah, why do you think that is? For some young men, do you think it's just too hard to articulate what you're feeling or communicate it? So
I'm going to be radical. I think school lets us down, lets them all down. They don't come out with any emotional fluency. So their first heartbreak is devastating for them. They don't know that sadness is okay, especially men. I watch my three sons, you know, toughen up, cover their sadness with anger, especially going out when they went out in the world. At home, they'd feel their sadness a bit more. So I think it's that. I don't think we have initiation processes that prepare young people for what's needed in terms of increasing their level of responsibility in the world. We keep them as teenagers, not inviting them to clean up the messes they're making.
Yeah. So what about you? So you're born in the UK.
Born in Burnley in Lancashire.
Yeah. How did you end up in NZ?
At 14, Mum and Dad brought us here. So 50-odd years ago I've been here. And that was a big step because my dad's the only child and I left my grandma and granddad there. And they were really close to me. They eventually came out to New Zealand in 82 to live, 76 to visit, 82 to live.
Wow.
So I was really glad about that.
And why did you select this line of work?
I reckon I was born with it. I learned to suss out a room, who's feeling what, do I go close to them, do I stay away? So I think it's part of my destiny.
Yeah, you do have like a really, I don't know, like warm and inviting presence where you do feel really immediately comfortable around you. Like you, when you walked in before, my partner was here and Jackson, the cameraman, and even my dog gravitated towards you. Like you just have this, I don't know. I don't know if you, I mean, I've only met you today, so I don't know if it's always been like that or if it's just like almost a grandmotherly sort of vibe that you have.
No, I come from Lancashire. All of us can talk to anybody. My German friend did a little bit of an audio podcast saying, how can you talk to just anyone?
Yeah.
And I turned it round on him and said, Gabrielle, how come you don't? Like, it's so foreign to me. Why would I walk past a human I can interact with?
Yeah.
So this is my, yeah, I think people do feel relaxed around me easily.
And so you trained as a psychotherapist. What does that mean exactly? And what did you do?
I trained first as a counsellor in the old Carrington before Unitec.
The old psychiatric hospital.
Yeah. It was not the psychiatric hospital, it was called Carrington Tech in 1992.
Okay.
And then it became Unitec. So I started training there and then became trained as a counsellor with the Human Development and Training Institute here in Newmarket. Then I wanted to sit an international qualification as a transactional analyst. So that's Eric Byrne's model of work. And then eventually over the decades I went up to as high as you can get actually as an internationally recognised, I have to remember the names, it's in the graveyard, training and supervising transactional analyst, which is where I met Clinton Callahan at the TA conference.
Right. That sounds like an exhausting line of work. You must, you know what I mean, in terms of the weight of problems that you're dealing with, and I don't know, it just feels like you'd finish each day carrying quite a burden.
No.
No?
My sister's in the accountancy world, that would be a burden. Yes, Sue. No, and I have energetic tools that I use that, you know, not taking it on, for sure. No, I can't think of, especially when I run a training, which is when I think I'm really on fire. I can't think of anything I'd rather do.
Wow, well, that's amazing. And then you became a trauma specialist. What does that mean exactly?
It happened, really. My interest in what stopped people reaching their full potential or being stuck when they did used to come for counselling or psychotherapy. And, you know, neurologically, physiologically, emotionally, when people haven't healed those frozen aspects of their life events. So it just happened. And then I did courses with David Bocelli, so I became a trauma release exercise trainer as well. And, of course, what makes me so good is I've had to do my own work.
Oh, did you on yourself?
Heal my own, absolutely heal all my own traumas.
Yeah. How did, what were yours? Do you want to get into that or not particularly?
What were my main? Well, Mum and Dad were really autocratic parents. They wanted blind obedience. Lancashire's national anthem is toughen up, get on with it.
It's that English stiff upper lip thing.
Well,
right?
Lancashire's even calm, worse. Keep,
right.
In fact, my dear friend up in Opononi, she says, you know when you're with a pom. And how do I know? They're puckered at both ends. It sums it up.
You, yeah.
Because, look, my parents were, both their parents were in the war. Mum's dad died in the war. Working class Lancashire was really hard. And so I was parented by parents who had their own traumas.
Mm.
Yeah, so a lot of that. Not feeling, don't feel, get on with it, be strong, hurry up. So I was superwoman for a while, and then that started to crumble, that image, and started to do my own feelings work.
God, that sounds really familiar.
To you.
100%. Yeah, it works until it doesn't, right?
Yeah. For all of us, I think. I think that's part of what midlife crisis is. The mechanism we created to survive eventually... Either we'll do more of it and do it more intensely, or it's an opportunity to thrive, not survive.
Yeah, it feels like it's like a bag of gym clothes, and you just keep stuffing in the dirty gym clothes, and eventually you got to wash it because it's.
That's
not...
a super analogy.
Is it actually?
Absolutely.
But it's like it's not going to go anywhere. It's just going to smell more
and rot.
Yeah.
For me, it showed up in dreams because I love dream work, and I every night I'd go to sleep, and all the toilets were full of shit. No matter where I went, I can still see the dream. Cubicle of 8 toilets, all nothing was flushing away, nowhere to go. So yours is a little more socially acceptable. Trim.
No, it's anything gym goes bag. Here, Janet. Okay, so what are some of the? Well, first of all, so how do you treat yourself? Like when you know you've got issues that need addressing? Because I would imagine it's easy to have like a broader view and be in your position and say, okay, Izzy, this is the issue. This is what you need. It's often harder to identify problems internally, isn't it?
Which is why I keep going to my own trainings. Oh, okay. And yeah. So like last 4 days, last week I was at Sharda Retreat again, and my friend and colleague Ana Nirumbuena was holding one of the foundation trainings in possibility management that's called Expand the Box. And it's a four-day intense looking at your own stuff. And then I'll go to a lab soon in March. Mm. So I keep being under scrutiny around other people. Plus I have a team, and if I'm triggered, which of course I get triggered, for me I know then that that's an emotion. So one distinction that wasn't made so clearly as a psychotherapist was the distinction between emotions and feelings. And although they're the same, mad, sad, bad, glad, emotions are always from the past. So I know if I'm triggered, there's an emotion there from the past, and I reach out to my team for an emotional healing process.
Mm.
So it's always an opportunity.
Okay, so there's the one-on-one sessions that you do, but there's also like the groups and the workshops that you do. So what are common problems or issues that you see in most people you work with, and you know, is there small stuff that we can order to get better?
Definitely. Bring your ears from beside your head to your heart. Not many people can really listen. They either do neurotic listening and make it all about them, or what I call the roadblocks to listening, which is interrogation or reassuring, using the roadblocks to communication, which is always a part of the trainings I offer.
Right.
And we've usually been the recipient of that kind of listening. And then there's really good reasons that I don't want to tell you what I'm feeling if you're going to fix me or tell me I shouldn't be. So did I answer your question? I lost track of the question.
I think so. I just asked what are the common problems or issues you see in people, and small stuff they can do to get better. You think just listening
a lot is
more.
Huge.
Yeah.
So my flying walker, I've got one thing written on one of my cupboards, and that's transformational listening changes the morphogenetic field. And I believe it.
Mm.
If I only listened to you off camera for half an hour, I'm sure you would go to places you haven't been.
Mm.
Because I do listen with my heart.
Yeah.
And on a training I put ears, E-A-R is in the middle of here, and I put a T on it, and that's heart. So that's always my commitment.
No, I love that.
To listen with my ears in my heart.
It feels like a more compassionate way of the saying, you know, you've got two ears, one mouth, use them.
Shut up. Yeah.
Okay, so what about me? I'm wondering how you could help me today. Because I saw the Stylebender movie, and I saw the work you did with Izzy, and I thought, oh, my God, this lady's amazing. And I've got so many issues, and I just don't know. I've got no reason to be unhappy about anything, but I'm just sad so often.
Well, wow, what did you just feel in your body when you said that, Tom? Yeah, that. Take a moment. Mm. We can cut this out. It doesn't have to be on here. Sad, there'll be a reason you're sad, Tom. And it might not be for now. Keep going.
Yeah, I don't know why. Like, I feel like I've got nothing to be sad about. Like, I've got, you know, fantastic family and friends and people that love me, and it's just I don't like myself as much as what I feel like I should. I don't know, it's like a self-esteem thing. I've my girlfriend, who you met on the way in, we've only been living together for a few months now, but like, we'll do exercise in the morning, and she'll have like a 3K run around the park. We'll do a Pilates workout. And then she'll be glowing in the face, and she'll say to me, oh, I'm so proud of myself. And for me to get to the point where I feel proud of myself, I need to be doing something extreme. Like on Monday, I went for a 30K run, and I felt proud of myself after that. But I'm just so mean to myself. And I don't know why. I don't know how I can get around it.
So
it's fucked, eh? It's fucked.
No, sounds normal to me. Who used to be mean to you?
Well, no one really. I mean, not that I can think of. I mean, you know, when you go to school's a rough time for everyone, right? To a degree.
Well, that alone, yes. How was it rough for you, Dom?
Well, I don't know. You just, I look back and I think, you know, you desperately want to fit in. You always want to fit in, and Yeah, so it was. I think I feel like I was just subjected to the standard sort of like bullying that everyone's subjected to at school. Like you don't, you know, all the kids had like BMXs, and mum and dad wanted me to have a sensible bike. So you don't have the shiny clothes or the shiny object that you want. But nothing really. You know what I mean?
But I think that is a something because were you ridiculed in any way?
Yeah, of course. But I feel like everyone.
Shame?
Yeah, but I feel like everyone at school gets subjected to that. No one gets out unscathed, right?
Doesn't mean it doesn't leave scars.
Mm.
Yeah, often we don't know we've been envied.
Mm.
We only know that embedded shame that's the result of it. But if we feel we're odd or different in any way. What about expectations? What would you say your parents' spoken or unspoken expectations of you were?
It's a complicated one with my parents because you look back on reflection. My parents were like super supportive. They brought me and my siblings up to tell you could do anything you wanted to, which is really, really cool. And we were growing up in a place called Palmerston North. I wanted to get into radio, which was a very, very unorthodox sort of occupation, but they never tried to talk me out of it. So they were always really encouraging in that way. But it was on the flip side of that, it was quite a tense household growing up. Like mum and dad should have broken up 20 years before they did. You get out and you form your own adult relationships and you realize, oh, that wasn't normal. Yeah. We always lived in quite small houses. It was like six people in a three bedroom house. Which is fine. It was just sort of middle class New Zealand in the 1980s. But you realize there's a lot of tension around, you know, with dad's drinking and mum and dad, and you know, didn't like each other and stuff like that.
So then,
but for me and my siblings, incredibly, you know, supportive.
However, what you're talking about affects kids enormously.
Mm.
If you have to live with that amount of conflict,
mm.
it's you can't relax.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there was another thing in the Stylebender movie that sort of resonated with me, with Izzy talking about his own family. It was a very, and yours actually, it was a very strict household. So I felt like I was getting the belt all the fucking time. And my younger brother, who was like a bit of a savage, he didn't mind. Like he'd be over the bed, he'd look back at dad and say, "You don't scare me." But me, I was a scared little boy.
No wonder, Dom. Where in the hierarchy of siblings are you?
I'm second to oldest. So it's, yeah, older sister, me, younger brother, and then younger sister.
I mean, that I would encourage us to look at or you with someone else at some stage. Because neurologically, you wouldn't have been able to relax.
Mm.
So that's what I'm talking about, this unprocessed experience that you have to survive. But surviving isn't thriving. How did your dad's drinking affect you? Because it's usually unpredictable, Dom, to be around someone who uses alcohol.
I look back now, it was... Dad drank a lot, but it was more the tension that was created with him and mum when he was drinking. So they'd sort of be arguing, but it was never, there was never any sort of, you know, physical violence or anything. I think there's verbal aggression between mum and dad.
And tension kids pick up.
Yeah, the tension, a lot of tension.
If you think about that younger you, what would you say to him so that you show him you had some idea of what it might have been like? Yeah, that one. Let your chin keep quivering, Dom. You can feel what you're feeling. Just let the emotions be here first, Dom. Go.
I'd want to tell him it's going to be all right, but it's like...
It wasn't all right, was it?
No, and it's still not.
Thank you for feeling this. No, and nothing about that was all right in order for him to relax neurologically. And who noticed the effect of this tension when Dad was drinking. Who noticed the effect on you, Dom?
I don't know if anyone did. Wow. I don't know. We just sort of cracked on with things. I don't know.
But how lonely that no one noticed the impact on you.
Yeah, I suppose it's just how it was at the time. I mean, yeah, my parents did. I know they did the best they could with the resources they had at the time and the mm-hmm. information they had at the time. And it was a very strict religious upbringing as well. And so it's how all my cousins were raised. And my mum's family, it's a very big family. And so all my cousins, it was all the same way. everyone was getting disciplined all the time. And you know, I look back now, and it just didn't sort of work for me, or didn't agree with me, and I've probably still got a bit of a chip on my shoulder about that. It's just weird, you know. I think I'm quite a nice person, but I treat everyone better than what I treat myself, and I think part of that is because I'm a good person. But I think part of it is maybe like an issue that I've just got this, yeah, people pleasing trait, or this this need to be liked or something like that.
Yeah, so natural given the environment you're talking about. Because while you could please them and keep them happy, how did that work for you?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think, like you were saying before, you know, it worked. It works for a time, and until it doesn't. Yeah.
Well, if you're brave enough, come on 9th and 10th of March to Building Communication Bridges Inside and Out.
Okay.
Because it's building bridges with that younger you that didn't have the attention put on how scary that was.
Mm-hmm. So how does that work? So with a group session like that, how does that work? That's very, very, like, how many people are there? Like, it's very confronting thinking you're going to break down in front of a group of strangers. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, that's most people's fear.
Mm.
And some people have done it many, many times. And they sit and watch the first time. Check out how I'm working. I've got a team. James Andrews is we're co-facilitators together, co-space holders, and then an amazing team of upcoming space holders. So we talk about fears of feeling in front of other people.
Mm.
And people who've done it before are already ready to talk about the feelings or the emotions that are locked. And we look at the driver behaviours, the pleasing others, is one of those driver behaviours that we engage to keep this other vulnerable part out of awareness.
Mm.
So for Izzy, definitely be strong. And that was one my main driver, five drivers. So we look at that as well in a training.
Mm. Life, it's hard, isn't it? And, I think these emotions have, for me, like, have been bubbling to the surface for the past few years, because I left school, got into a career in radio, kept myself as busy as what I could. And it's only been the last few years that I've sort of taken the foot off the accelerator and given myself like a bit more breathing space. And it's when you do that, it's like I've realised now that my work or career, I think I probably overworked myself, and as a way of maybe trying to sort of outrun potential issues, or just keeping myself busy so I don't have to focus on anything else.
And even look at your body as you're talking about this. Your body's communicating to both of us.
Mm. Is it? How do you mean?
Well, you're busy shaking. You might not even know you're shaking. Your body's giving me the clues that, yeah, hurry up, be strong, carry on, soldier on. We're twins. And it did work for a while. Well, you can keep it going. Oh, but then usually life comes along with something. For me, it was my second child, and he had lactose intolerance and cried. I hardly slept.
Mm.
And that's what I needed to start cracking. My, if I think of a walnut, it had to, the pressure from the inside started to crack the walnut up. And
yeah, for me, I feel like I was
constantly chasing something, and it was sort of like once I reach this milestone, everything's going to be all right. Once I get this, and for me, I think that sort of manifested itself in the accumulation of possessions. So I got a really nice house, and it wasn't until I accumulated everything I want, including a wonderful swimming pool and a spa pool and a library room, the house that was, I suppose, a house that's nicer than any house I ever grew up in. It's when you accumulate that, you sort of realize, oh, the actual dopamine hit or whatever was the thought of getting something. And then when you actually get it, it's like, oh, is that all? And then you're chasing the next thing. So a few years ago, I downsized. So I'm in my apartment now. So it's still quite cluttered, but it's closer to minimalism than what I was. But it's a really scary thought when you're chasing something your whole life and you think these things are going to bring you happiness, and then you get to fucking your late 40s or 50 and you realise, oh shit, nah, can't outrun it.
Yeah, can't outrun it, exactly. And then you're faced with these feelings and emotions.
Yeah, and it's just been the last couple of years, you realise, I can't go on like this. Like, I'm fit and healthy, so all going well, I'm going to have another good 30 years ahead of me, and I just can't spend another 30 years, you know, feeling like this. It's just not fair. It's hard.
I'm really touched by your vulnerability right now.
Really?
Totally. Such, again, like Izzy, such a visible frontline person, and you're willing to shake with some fear in your chin in front of me. You've not met me before. Mm. Totally inspiring. And then to be a role model for other young men who also don't know how to be with their feelings.
Yeah, well, I've been trying to be more open and vulnerable over the last few years because I realise it's an important thing. Like, I genuinely always thought it was a weakness, and it's only the last few years that I've realised that the ability to cry and the ability to communicate this stuff is actually the complete opposite, the polar opposite of a weakness. But it's hard. It's not easy for me. But then another thing, I'll find it easier to sit here with you, who's a relative stranger, in front of these microphones than what I will having these conversations with people who I love and who love me. That's fucked up, right?
That makes total sense to
does
me.
It, does because, it?
Well, you might not ever see me again. So the risk, the risk is much lower.
Right.
You're not risking me, one, judging you, which I don't, or distancing myself from you, or labelling you as fucked up.
You don't need to do that. I'll do that first.
Well, I'll see that. Which is usually one where we protect ourselves. We get in and beat ourselves up first.
Mm. Yeah. Is that quite a common thing, is it?
Very.
Mm.
And, you know, the wound of school for so many people is the story you're telling, and I feel so sad about that. That school's something to be survived. Mm. It's a place where some of these uncles, traumas happened.
Mm.
I mean, that's tragic for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think school's probably got a lot to answer for. Now, I went to an all-boys school where, you know, if you showed any sort of vulnerability or weakness, it would just be weaponized against you. So you just wouldn't. So,
well, you learn to toughen up, right?
You have
and
to.
And not it's show
survival it. Survival mechanism.
Yeah.
Mm.
And what you're talking about is the old map of feelings, where we think weakness, sadness is weak. You know, it's one thing we do on the training is, what's your current map of beliefs about feeling sad, scared, anger or joy? And once we know that and realise what we're really saying is feelings are not okay, then we look on. So the first day we look at how we get in what I call the swamp, the shit. And then the second day we look at how to live in the garden. And then feelings are not only okay, but I'm consciously accessing my sadness right now for compassion with you and to communicate. Or you would see my anger consciously, never to hurt someone, but to hold boundaries.
Mm.
Say, no, this isn't okay. And to go for what I want. I want to be, I am a grandmother of six. I want to be this elder, or what Rob Makaraka calls fire Janet. to be the person in the world that many people need, and to leave the world a better place when this physical body's buried in the ground.
Which hopefully won't be for a long time yet.
Yeah, I hope not too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, every day, every conversation, I want to create the culture I want to live in, which is your feelings are totally welcome in my space, Dom. And I suspect if you did come, it's you'd been able to reconnect with that frightened Dom that no one ever witnessed. Because we need protection when we're scared. And you didn't have it.
Yeah. That's lovely. Immediately I sit here thinking, if this podcast goes out, you know, how will my parents receive it? You know what I mean? They'll be like, well, yeah, we were there for you. We did have that protection. Do you know what
I mean? Well, they could protect you to the level they knew was possible. Mm.
Yeah.
I say the same. They did the best they could.
100%.
But they would have been parents. They would have been children of parents, either in the Depression, probably. Mm. I'm trying to guess your age.
Yeah.
Or their parents went to war. So it's the intergenerational stuff that doesn't get transformed. it gets transmitted. Yeah. So if they're listening, it's not that we're blaming them in any way.
Mm.
And I'm going to bring it back to me. As a parent, I've definitely created scars for my four children, even with the best of intentions.
Mm.
And I'm mindful of that, and I've grieved that. I did not have the tools because I was doing my own work to be the kind of grandma I am now, because I've got those much more skills. So anything you would want to say if your mum and dad listened to this? What would you want to say?
Look, I know I love you guys, and I know you did the absolute best you could with the information you had at the time. But they noted that as well. We're not an overly verbal family, but, you know, I'm going overseas with my mum in a few months. We're running a marathon together. My dad lives in Wellington. We're not overly close, but, you know, we catch up by text, you know, every month or every couple of months. But yeah, watching Style Bender movie, like, that made me feel like guilt about my relationship with my own parents. I mean, not that I should buy them a Bentley, because first of all, I don't have the means, but secondly, like, the main thing, like, material stuff aside, like the Bentley that he bought his parents aside, like seeing the way he greets his parents, and even though he's still fucked off about, you know, the discipline and the stuff from growing up, how he manages to hug them and embrace them. I just don't feel like I have that with my family. I feel like I've got an aloofness or something, you know, inability to sort of connect.
Well, thinking anybody that uses excessive amount of alcohol is doing it to numb, to keep their numbness bar high. Your dad will have a good reason.
Yeah.
He used that anesthetic. Others use anesthetic of working hard so they don't feel.
Mm.
So for me, it had to go this way so that we could start writing different chapters.
Mm. Yeah, I'm going to see you in my own time. Yeah, I'm going to see you. When's this workshop you're doing?
There's one in Kirikiri, 2nd and 3rd of March.
Yeah.
And Auckland, 9th and 10th of March.
And what about if anyone wants to get hold of you themselves? What's the best way they should go about doing that?
JanetRedmond.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just take a minute now. You've actually opened up probably more than you realise.
Mm.
What's your experience of yourself inside?
Oh. I don't know.
Breathe that all the way out. You hold your breath as one way of... This is one way we numb, Dom.
Yeah.
You're not doing anything wrong, but this is the survival mechanism you created literally to survive. Good idea. I'm getting dry talking.
A big gulp of water. I don't know. I suppose I feel like... I don't know. A little bit of like guilt or shame now or something. I don't know, it's a weird relationship I have with myself. Like the way I speak to myself sometimes, Janet, it's like I do have certain boundaries, and it's like I wouldn't the way I speak to myself, I wouldn't accept it from anyone else, you know, family member or otherwise. I'll be like, well, you know, you can fuck right off. Yet it's okay for me to, it feels like the standards or the expectations or whatever it is that I have for myself, it's just really so high. Impossibly high. Yeah. And it's exhausting.
Never... it is impossible. You wouldn't achieve them.
Mm.
I look at it this way. I used some of my money when I sold my house to start a family business called Drain King. I have to say it slowly because people think I'm saying drinking. Drain King. And so all my son, three sons and my grandson are in the external drain business. And I keep seeing, emotionally I do the same work psychologically. Go in and clear the drains out. But first on top of the manhole, Dom, is this... energy, gremlin, I don't know what you would call it, that is much more vicious to ourselves. But it's a guardian. I don't see it as something bad at all. But we created a somebody that guards what might look like the shit, literally in external drains, but is actually the gems and treasures that Carl Jung talked about. The unconscious is 90% gold. So I suspect the person you've got guiding what might look like your shit, your gems, is the part we have to come in contact with first. Because I know its motivation will have good intention. Its strategy's outdated. What do you reckon about that theory?
I'm going to have to go back and listen to this later today, maybe even two or three times, just to take it all in.
It's a big sigh. What are you feeling as you have that huge sigh, Tom?
Well, after you breaking down in front of you, I feel like a certain level of exhaustion now. I know that when we finish the session, it'll be that feeling when you go and see a movie during the daytime and then you walk back out into the daylight afterwards and it's quite an overwhelming sort of like a sensory overload. Yeah, it's going to feel like that.
Well, you've invited me to help you feel this stuff, and that is part of my skill set.
Yeah. Yeah, you got me easy, didn't you? It was a first round knockout. No.
Actually, I said to James, will you come with me? And he was willing to. And then I said, no, I don't want you to come because I'm hoping Dom will get into his feelings. So.
Well, be careful what you wish for, Janet.
Who was the one that invited me? I didn't reach out to you.
Yeah.
No, you knew. It's somehow you know that I have the skills or the presence to meet you where you're at, so you're not so hard on yourself, Dom.
Is that quite a common thing? Or
totally.
Is it?
Totally.
Can't tell you how that makes me feel happy to hear it's a common thing, because it can just feel very alone and isolated sometimes.
People think you're the only one going through it.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Hopefully this helps some other people as well. And hopefully some people reach out to you if they feel in a, not even the same position as me, but just if they're going through some stuff that they think you could help with. Because, yeah, after watching you in the Stylebender thing, it's you're very talented. You do have a very particular skill set.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And not only me, any possibility manager in New Zealand, go on the Possibility Management New Zealand website. The Global PM website, there's 650 free websites there. Clinton Callahan and his partner and Chloe Destremo have huge podcasts, TV. They're willing to record it, all the spaces they hold. There's free things out there. You don't have to have money to be able to pay for pay for the services of someone.
Yeah, full disclosure, like if we were sitting down having this chat 5 years ago, it would have been a very different. Actually, we wouldn't have even been sitting down having this chat 5 years ago, because I would have heard the term possibility manager and I would have been like, what a pile of woo-woo bullshit. Yeah. Is that fair? That's harsh,
totally
isn't
fair.
It?
No, totally fair.
No, but then it gets to the point where you realise I'm not as happy as what I should be. I've got no reason to be upset, but nothing's making me happy. So I'm open to anything. And, seeing someone like Israel Adesanya, seeking your services and getting real benefit from it, I think that's it's a real empowering thing.
I'm so glad. Look, how vulnerable was he?
Mm.
And showing the power feel to heal, he showed it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, crying's a really good thing, isn't it? I went through years and years and years without it. I mean, I mentioned at the beginning of this chat, like I even cried a couple of times during the Stylebender documentary. I cry all the time now. I've got no issue with it. But I went through my 20s and 30s without crying at all. And myself and my your former wife, like, we went through a lot of stuff. We went through like rounds and rounds of unsuccessful IVF treatment, and I don't remember like crying or processing any of that stuff at the time.
You would have had a high numbness bar.
Is that gym bag we're talking about? I was
exactly, exactly. And I bet your wife at the time would have needed your emotional connection.
Yeah,
having that's such a journey, that one.
Yeah, oh no, it's a lot. So there's also a lot of guilt and shame about that. Like I really felt like I let her down, and a lot of that was just like burying myself in my work, just work as an addiction in a way.
Yeah.
Mm.
And like Gabor Mate says, never why the addiction, but why the pain.
Mm.
And harder with what you're saying, because you've made a way, you went for what you wanted, you got it, and then you go, wow, that didn't fill that empty hole inside.
Yeah, yeah. But also you climb a mountain and then you realise, now I've just got to climb another mountain. Like you never reach the summit, do you? You never reach the point where... okay, once I get there, I'm going to be happy, and that's it. I can sit down and relax.
Not if you're running away from these parts you put underneath the manhole.
Mm.
And 5 years ago, I would have met your cocky, arrogant self, knowing there's a really scared part of you under there. Or else why would you protect it that way?
Mm.
You wouldn't scoff.
Mm.
We usually scoff at what we need most.
Yeah.
Or can. Not...
Yeah, that's interesting. So I would have been putting on an act of bravado, but you would have seen right through it.
Yeah, I think so. That self-righteousness is the defence against the embedded shame that's deep and underneath. And thankfully I've got a spade handle long enough to eventually reach most. Not all, but most.
Yeah, oh, you're great. What a great hour it's been. Janet Redmond, thank you. We were going backwards and forwards by email. I think I messaged you. I looked you up on Google. I Googled you and looked you up immediately after watching the Stylebender movie. We bounced backwards and forwards a couple of times. You wanted to know what the nature of the podcast was. I hope what we've done today has been sort of what I indicated in the email.
Yes, totally.
Yeah.
And to make this message, hey, it's okay to feel. In fact, it's essential to feel. And then to find new initiation processes that invite us all to be more responsible and create the kind of relationships and communities where everyone can thrive, not just some successful people. That's what matters to me.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's a good place to end this.
Thank you, Dom.
Janet Redmond.
Thank you for your vulnerability.
Yeah.
Because... this will touch other people. You'll speak to that part of them that all your successful radio personality may not have.
Mm.
So thank you.
Yeah, that could happen. Or someone will get the video of me ugly crying and turn it into a meme.
Well, that speaks more about them, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
And more, it would say more about their fears of feeling their feelings.
Yeah.
But they might... there's people have got shadows, as we all have.
Yeah, I am actually getting better with that. Like years ago, that fear of people I don't know mocking me for something would hold me back from doing things, but it doesn't anymore. I actually don't give a fuck about that.
Good. Make your own meme first. So the power of vulnerability.
Yeah.
And have it next to a picture of Izzy.
Yeah.
Crying.
How good.
I mean, how big were those tears, eh? After Foe died and he blocked up his sadness, did that dumb shit about rape.
Oh, the rape tweet, yeah.
Yeah. And then that session at my sister's place where he said, Janet, I want to be able to access my sadness. But first we had to do that rage hold.
Mm.
So, you know, if you could have that picture of him crying next to a picture of you crying, you're starting a new men's culture and it touches me deeply. Mm. Thank you, Dom.
Oh, you're the best. Janet Redmond, possibility manager. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I'm so pleased to hear that even though you are of pensioner age, you're not retiring.
I'm a refiring.
Good on you, because, yeah, New Zealand needs you.
Lovely to meet you.
Yeah, likewise.
Thank you, Dom.
Thank you so much for making it all the way through this episode of the Dom Harvey Podcast. Little bit of housekeeping to finish. You can get a hold of me anytime you want. DomHarveyNZ@gmail.com. Or if you don't do so already, give me a follow on Instagram, DomHarveyNZ. You can DM me there. Also, that's where I share updates about the podcast, upcoming guests, all that sort of stuff. By the way, I love hearing from you guys as well, especially with feedback that you have for the podcast, guest suggestions, sponsorship inquiries, absolutely anything really. Also, if you don't do so already, you can subscribe to the podcast or leave a review or a rating if your podcast app allows. And if you've got a YouTube account, you can follow the podcast there too, DomHarveyNZ. You can watch each episode on YouTube. Hey, just before we go, quick thanks to the sponsors of this episode, Radix and Generate. These two Kiwi companies are both leaders in their fields, Radix with nutrition and Generate with their KiwiSaver scheme. For all the links and for more info about these friends of the podcast, please go to the description of this episode. They're both great companies who can add value to your life. So by supporting them, not only will you be helping me and my podcast massively, you will also be helping yourself. So thanks again, Generate and Radix. Love you guys. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. And I do hope to see you next time for the next episode of the Dom Harvey Podcast. See ya.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.